This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The big story today, of course, the U.S. Supreme Court upholds the basic provisions of the Affordable Care Act, the federal health care overhaul law, handing President Obama a huge victory. Our focus today, what this means for health care consumers in Massachusetts and how it affects the local politics of health care and next fall's election.
We'll begin with Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, who's been studying the decision and rounding up some local reaction. Hi there, Carrie.
Hi, Meghna.
So what happened today?
Well, so as you can imagine, here in Massachusetts, which is the cradle or the model for what became the Affordable Care Act, the people who were involved in creating that model are feeling very validated and affirmed and kind of vindicated. I just got back from a big press conference at the State House about health reform going forward, and the mood was downright festive. Here's the Reverend Burns Stanfield, who's the president of the Greater Boston Interfaith Organization, which is very active on health care issues.
We are elated. We are thrilled. We are ready to sing from the mountaintops with all the prophets of our religious traditions. Today's ruling ends the constitutional debate, and it should end the rancorous political debate as well. Here in Massachusetts, once we passed our own reform, we made the move from vigorous debate to vigorous implementation.
So he was one of the most colorful speakers at the State House press conference, but he pretty much captured the mood. These are normally like pretty low-key, buttoned-down people, and they were looking really happy, like a lot of hugging and backslapping and saying, "We did it," among these people in suits, and a lot of pride that their Massachusetts model is going forward nationally.
Okay, but just to confirm, today's Supreme Court ruling has absolutely no impact on that Massachusetts model here in Massachusetts. It doesn't change healthcare reform here.
That's just about right, yeah. There, in terms of direct effects, the one thing that could have happened if the law had been overturned is that it could have affected some Medicaid money that we were hoping to get from the federal government. But that's about it. And so basically what happened to the federal law, you're right, would not affect our own requirement that pretty much everyone has to have health insurance. I mean, some people did speculate that if the court totally overturned the Affordable Care Act, that maybe that could have energized people who oppose our mandate, our requirement to get health insurance. But, you know, that hasn't happened for the last 6 years, so it seemed kind of unlikely.
Okay, but nevertheless, many officials across the state of Massachusetts spoke after the Supreme Court issued its ruling this morning. We have a cut from Governor Deval Patrick speaking a little earlier today.
We have already shown here in Massachusetts how economically important and morally right health care reform can be. We live in a state right now where 99.8% of children have access to quality care. Why should it be any other way?
Right. So that was Governor Deval Patrick. And what his administration and other health reform advocates are saying is that this Supreme Court decision frees them and kind of energizes them to forge ahead with their plans for the next phase of health reform, which is aimed at cutting health costs. They're saying things like full steam ahead.
Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. We will go full steam ahead covering this issue now. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we're going to be hearing from a number of folks about today's decision, including Supreme Court watchers, politicians, and local healthcare policy experts. Joining us now is Jim Roosevelt. He's president and CEO of Tufts Health Plan. He also serves as chairman of the board of directors for the Massachusetts Association of Health Plans. And Jim Roosevelt, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you.
So give us your reaction.
Well, this is a very important day for healthcare in the United States as a whole. It's important for us here in Massachusetts, but not quite as dramatic locally, because many of the things that are in the Affordable Care Act we had already pioneered in Massachusetts. Things like coverage of students up to age, or rather young people of up to age 26 on their parents' policies, no lifetime and annual maximums, and no exclusions or refusals to enroll for people with pre-existing conditions.
Right. We just heard Carrie Goldberg making the point that a lot of the advocates across the state feel that this Supreme Court decision sort of unleashes the next move, if you will, in health care reform. That is going full steam ahead with cost-cutting initiatives. Do you think that's the case?
I think it unleashes going full steam ahead with getting many more people in the country covered with real health insurance. Mm. And I think it also unleashes the many things that are in the Affordable Care Act that improve the quality of care, improve care coordination, improve information for patients and their doctors and nurses. I think it unleashes all of that. I think a lot has been on hold with people right on up through the Obama administration, afraid to say too much about about all the improvements that can be made, because it could all come back to haunt them if everything went down.
Of course, there's some political implications as well. You served on President Obama's transition team. Obviously, this is a huge victory for him. How do you think this affects the coming election season and the political races, even statewide political races here in Massachusetts?
Well, you know, I think this is really not about politics today. I really think this is about whether every American has access to have a family doctor. So I really think that's what this is about today. I think President Obama has made it clear that this is something that he feels every American deserves, so I expect him to campaign on it. And today I understand Governor Romney made it clear that his words were, what the Supreme Court failed to do on its last day in session, I will do on my first day of office, repeal all of Obamacare.
But what do you think about that? I mean, I take your point that maybe today shouldn't be about politics, but inevitably it is. I mean, within minutes of the Supreme Court releasing its decision, John Boehner tweeted that this is why we have to go full speed ahead toward repeal. I'm wondering if you think, to what extent this galvanizes, energizes the forces who oppose health care reform and what that does in the coming election season.
Well, I think for people who really oppose having everybody have access to a family doctor, it does galvanize them. But I think that if it's very interesting, if you look at the polls, everyone focuses on the fact that by a small margin, about 5 points, there has been unpopularity of the of Obamacare. People who have said they're not happy with it. If you look at every one of the elements in the Affordable Care Act, whether it's no copays and deductibles for preventive care, or no failure to provide insurance for pre-existing conditions, and so on, every one of those is overwhelmingly popular. The one thing that pulls negatively is the personal responsibility provision, the mandate. Now that that is a settled question, I think that the advocates for healthcare reform are going to be freed up to not just talk about, but work on the other aspects.
Well, Jim Roosevelt, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Okay, great to be with you.
That's Jim Roosevelt. He's president and CEO of Tufts Health Plan. Thanks again, Jim.
We are talking about the Supreme Court's major decision this morning to uphold the Affordable Care Act. It was a 5-4 decision. The swing vote came from Chief Justice John Roberts, who wrote for the majority, quote, "The Affordable Care Act's requirement that certain individuals pay a financial penalty for not obtaining health insurance may reasonably be characterized as a tax." And with those words, he held up the individual mandate, which first got its start here in Massachusetts with our own landmark health insurance reform plan many years ago. So listeners, what do you think about what happened at the court today? Do you agree with its decision or do you not? And what do you think this means for health insurance reform and health care reform going forward in the United States? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So as we said, the individual mandate does stand, which means no change in the Massachusetts landmark health insurance reform law, which was, of course, the first such in the country. Here's more reaction from this morning from Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley.
We were concerned that people from other states would come here looking for care. We would not deny them that, but it would mean our costs would go up. We made that argument to the Supreme Court, and I think that this levels the playing field now for all states.
However, there is one big issue here. Massachusetts reform law does rely on Medicaid payments from the federal government. And in today's ruling, the Supreme Court narrowed the scope of the Affordable Care Act when it comes to how and when Congress can withhold Medicaid payments to states. For clarification on this, we go now to Meredith Rosenthal. She's a professor of health economics and policy at the Harvard School of Public Health. Professor Rosenthal, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Magna.
So what exactly did the court say when it comes to the use of Medicaid payments?
Well, essentially, the Medicaid provisions in the Affordable Care Act like the coverage provisions, include both carrots and sticks to get states to expand Medicaid. And so what the court addressed was one of the sticks, essentially. So the federal government is providing fully subsidized funding for Medicaid expansions through 2019. But in case that was not enough to get all states to expand Medicaid to cover the poorest of the poor who are not currently covered by Medicaid in many states, the provisions also included the ability for the federal government to withdraw other funds from those states that refused to go ahead with this expansion. And it was that provision that the court decided would not stand.
So does that essentially mean that states who don't go ahead with the expansion can do so now with no penalties whatsoever?
Well, in effect, it effectively limited the extent to which the federal government can penalize those states. So, you know, the question here is if these subsidies that extend from 2014 through 2019 and essentially fully cover the cost of a Medicaid expansion population in states that are not already covering those populations, if that's not enough to get states to expand their Medicaid programs, it's not entirely clear how important the penalty would have been in encouraging those states to do so. It depends a little bit on exactly how it was going to play out in terms of really the extent to which the federal government would, in fact, withdraw other funds and whether there wouldn't already be sufficient pressure on those states who have been dragging their feet, as it were, on the coverage provisions to finally take action.
Well, I wonder what you think this means for people on the ground in states, and we don't know which states this might be, but say there is a state that says, okay, we're not going to do the expansion. If I were to be living in that state, what would it mean for me?
Right. So again, the coverage expansion for Medicaid, as you may know, is really about bringing in very low-income populations who do not meet categorical requirements that most states have for Medicaid coverage. So single men or single individuals who are very poor but do not meet any of the other kinds of requirements that are usually held up for Medicaid. And so for that population, if there are states who now will not follow through and cover everyone up to 133% of the federal poverty line, which is the intent of the Affordable Care Act, those populations really stand to lose a lot. We know from recent research and I would say common sense that insurance coverage for these very low-income populations is important both for their own financial stability but also for their health.
Hmm. And finally, I wonder, do you think that this particular action by the Supreme Court in terms of narrowing that Medicaid provision, might that limit Congress's ability in the future when it comes to legislating future health policy?
Well, my understanding, and I'm afraid we may be getting into a little bit more of a legal interpretation than an economic one, but my understanding is that this is very specifically about trying to leverage a broader set of federal dollars to mandate state behavior, as it were. And so I believe, the way I read it, the federal government can still bring the states along in terms of health policy, the important kinds of coverage provisions that we've seen, perhaps delivery system reform as well, through other means. But the Supreme Court said that it was going too far to use other program funding as a stick to try to get states to do something in another area.
Hmm. Well, Professor Rosenthal, your expertise and clarification is much appreciated. Meredith Rosenthal is a professor of health policy and management at the Harvard School of Public Health. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Jonathan Gruber is an MIT healthcare economist who's probably been more anxious than anyone about today's Supreme Court decision. Gruber has been called Mr. Mandate because it was his research that convinced the Obama administration that healthcare reform would not work unless everyone was required to buy insurance. Earlier today, Jonathan Gruber gave us his reaction.
I would say I'm relieved. It's sort of crazy we even got to this place. My 15-year-old son today, for the sports fans, likened it to a situation where your team blew a big lead in the ninth and then came back and won in an extra inning. we never should have been in this situation. This is clearly constitutional law. The vast majority of experts who were polled said it's a constitutional law. And so I'm just sort of relieved that, that the court agreed.
And from your perspective, what was at stake here? Had the court ruled against the mandate, found it unconstitutional, what would have been the impact?
What was at stake really is the fundamental fairness of insurance markets. Basically, what most of your listeners might not realize, if you don't have health insurance from your employer or from the government in America today, you're pretty screwed. You're in a situation where you can be denied insurance just because you're sick, or your price can be raised when you get sick. That's just an unfair way for insurance markets to work. Essentially, we don't have meaningful insurance in America unless you have it from your employer or the government. Without the mandate, we can't fix that.
Hmm. And Jonathan Gruber, what's the significance in your view that the court did not accept the government's primary argument that the mandate was constitutional under the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, but did accept the secondary argument that it was a constitutionally acceptable tax?
I think from the perspective of the Affordable Care Act, there's nothing much significant about it. I think from the perspective of jurisprudence, I'm worried about it. As I said, they recently polled constitutional scholars, and 18 out of 21 said that that this was clearly constitutional under the Commerce Clause. So I'm very disturbed that the majority of justices in the Supreme Court would disagree with such a vast majority of their colleagues.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the part of the decision that involved Medicaid expansion, and that's a big part of the Affordable Care Act to cover millions of low-income Americans. The court ruled that the government could not withhold new Medicaid money from states that don't comply with a new law. So my question to you as the healthcare economist, what kind of effect does that have on the overall law as we move forward?
I don't think it has a big effect. Look, state Medicaid is affected in two ways by this law. The first way is people who are already eligible for health insurance under Medicaid will not take it because of the mandate. And that costs states significant money. That costs states between 25 cents and 50 cents on the dollar. Here in Massachusetts, it's 50 cents on the dollar. So that costs states significant amount of money. On the other hand, the part the ruling deals with is the fact that people are made newly eligible for Medicaid. Well, those people, the federal government is picking up originally 100% of the cost, and in the long run, 90% of the cost. So really, if states are really going to turn down getting $9 federal for every $1 they put in, then, that's just crazy. So I really think in the long run, states are going to take this. It kind of reminds me, for those listeners who remember back in the 1980s when the Reagan administration said to states, if you don't raise your drinking age, we're going to withhold your highway funds. This is kind of like that. We're sort of saying, look, guys, if you don't expand Medicaid, we're going to withhold an enormous amount of money for your state. And if you want to turn that down, that's your prerogative, but you're losing 90 cents on every dollar.
But given that a whole bunch of states were opposed to this law, doesn't it stand to reason that a whole bunch of them might indeed turn down that money?
As an empirical economist, I think it'll be a fascinating test of political economy, which is, are politicians really going to stand up in front of their population? The governor of Texas is going to say, I am turning down billions of dollars of federal subsidies because I don't want to pay the 10% Texas has to pay. If the voters want to elect a candidate who says that, then, that's their prerogative. But I don't think they're thinking very straight.
Well, speaking of the political debate, why do you think that so many Americans, and if you believe the polls, it's quite a few, don't like this law? And given that, what do Democrats have to do in terms of, sharpening their message or getting the message out that this law might, in fact, be good for a lot of voters out there?
I think the answer is quite simple, which is it's misinformation. Here's a simple example. If you ask Americans, what do you think of the individual mandate, only like a third support it. If you then say, by the way, do you realize the individual mandate doesn't apply to you if you already have health insurance, support goes up over 60%. Okay, people just don't understand this law. So what has to happen is we need to spread understanding. I've tried to, in my small way, I've written a comic book that tries to explain the healthcare law.
And we've talked to you about that on this show, in fact.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I really feel like we need to do whatever we can to just explain it. The point is, if people understand the law, they will like it. And the evidence for that is not my conjecture. Look at Massachusetts. We have 2/3 public support for what is basically the same law. That's not that we're some crazy liberal state. That wouldn't get us to 2/3. The 2/3 reflects the fact that once you understand what's in this law, you like it.
Well, Jonathan Gruber, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Nathan.
That's Jonathan Gruber talking to us from Lexington. He's an MIT healthcare economist.
We are talking about the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision today to uphold the Affordable Care Act. Justice Anthony Kennedy, who's usually one of those swing votes, voted with the dissent today, along with Justices Alito, Scalia, and Thomas. He wrote in his dissent that the minority of justices viewed the law as, quote, invalid in its entirety, and that it amounts to a vast judicial overreaching. Again, that's Justice Kennedy in the dissent in today's 5-4 vote. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Mary Lou is calling from Scituate. You're on the air, Mary Lou.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I am delighted with this decision. I have a grandchild who was born with a birth defect. His mother is the breadwinner in the family, and she considered not taking a job because her health insurance, good health insurance, had a $2 million cap. And all of those children who are born with birth defects, who arrive in this world with a pre-existing condition, they now can be assured that they are not going to be told that they have a pre-existing condition and cannot be insured, and they are not going to be told that they have used up too much money. And I just want to make the point, I know Mr. Gruber talked about Medicaid families. This impacts families with good employer-based insurance as well. And we are very lucky to live in Massachusetts, but I think that once people understand that this is a situation that could happen to all of us, everyone is one accident or illness away from...
Mary Lou, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Let's try to get another one in before we go out on this break. Gary from Sudbury is calling. Hi, Gary. You're on the air.
Hi. I am so delighted, absolutely delighted with the Supreme Court decision, and absolutely stunned that Chief Justice Roberts was the swing vote. I don't think anyone anticipated that. I do worry, however, about many states like Texas and Florida that have very conservative Tea Party governors who will not expand Medicaid and will leave a lot of individuals, a lot of poor individuals, out of health care.
Well, Gary, we're going to be talking a little bit more about that in the hour ahead, so stay tuned and thanks for your call.
And when we come back, more on today's Supreme Court's ruling on the Affordable Care Act. We'll talk with former Governor Michael Dukakis and Republican political candidate Richard Tesei, plus a Supreme Court insider on what today's decision means for the legacy of the High Court. So stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about the United States Supreme Court's decision 5-4 today that upholds the Affordable Care Act. Here's President Barack Obama speaking earlier today.
I know a lot of coverage through this health care debate has focused on what it means politically. Well, it should be pretty clear by now that I didn't do this because it was good politics. I did it because I believed it was good for the country.
There are nonetheless undeniable political implications to today's news. Despite the court's ruling, the health care law will be front and center in the coming months leading up to next November's election. Here's former Governor Mitt Romney with his reaction this morning.
What the court did not do on its last day in session, I will do on my first day if elected president of the United States.
That's former Governor Mitt Romney reacting to the ruling today. What's your reaction? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, just as the Affordable Care Act featured prominently in the 2010 Massachusetts special election that sent Senator Scott Brown to the Senate, Democrats and Republicans alike will use this issue in the coming political season.
And we'll start this part of the show with a man who has seen many political seasons, former Massachusetts governor and the 1988 Democratic nominee for president, Michael Dukakis. He was in our studios earlier today. I asked him what he made of today's big decision.
Well, it's mixed. This is a very confusing decision. I mean, for one thing, there's no doubt about the constitutionality of this bill under the Commerce Clause. I mean, I don't know what the chief is talking about.
It wasn't found constitutional under the Commerce Clause. It was found constitutional as a tax.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting stretch, but totally unnecessary. A few years ago, the court said that the feds could regulate somebody's backyard marijuana patch under the Commerce Clause. We require mandate employers to pay minimum wages under the Commerce Clause. There are dozens and dozens of federal mandates under the Commerce Clause. I have no idea what that's all about. Yes. Certainly upholds that. On the other hand, the decision on Medicaid is very troubling.
Well, tell me about that. So this is the provision where the justices essentially rule that the feds can withhold new Medicaid money from states who don't participate, right?
That's true.
So what's the problem with that?
Well, because they can't condition the states continuing to receive Medicaid money by adding, in this case, working people making up to 133% of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us who have followed healthcare for a long time, this is absolutely baffling because, for one thing, the states can't accept money under the current Medicaid program unless they meet all kinds of conditions in terms of coverage and what they pay for. Congress has steadily expanded the kinds of things they must cover as a condition for receiving Medicaid money. Nobody has ever suggested that the Congress can't impose conditions on the states when they give them money. I mean, you can't get federal highway money for your state unless your minimum drinking age is 21. If you want 18, you lose your highway money. And,
right.
And you know, these kinds of forms of federal aid have all kinds of conditions, which I don't find a problem. I mean, I don't think Congress ought to be giving us unrestricted money without telling the states what they want to do about it.
So what will the effect be on the overall implementation of the law and the overall goals of this law?
I think what you're going to have is battles, especially in more conservative states, over whether or not they're going to proceed to expand coverage under the law, since apparently they can decide not to do so because
mm-hmm.
they won't get the money. What does that mean? Well, it means, I guess, that in some states, working people up to 133% of poverty aren't going to have the benefit of the law. And I think that's unfortunate because, you know, this is all about working folks.
Right.
This is
yeah.
not a welfare program. We've got 60 million uninsured people in this country, overwhelmingly working and members of working families, about 85% of them. Those are the folks that aren't being insured these days. And
but, Governor, as someone who has, followed this issue for years, someone who has advocated for health care coverage for all for a long, long time, isn't there a part of you that's extraordinarily relieved that overall, you know, this law has been allowed to stand?
I'm pleased. On the other hand, I don't think we ought to kid ourselves. If Romney is elected, that's the end of the Affordable Care Act,
mm-hmm.
which is ironic given his role in at least providing some leadership in the state to make it possible for us to have what the president now wants everybody in the United States to have. You've got a Congress which, if it goes Republican in both houses, will do everything it can to mess up the president's ability to proceed with this, even if the president is elected. So this is not going to be an easy time, and I don't think this law, at least in some respects, has made it any easier.
Well, let me ask you about that because, on the one hand, this is perceived as a victory for Obama. Presumably, Democrats could rally around that in the coming election season. On the other hand, is this going to galvanize opponents? I mean, I was struck by the fact that House Speaker John Boehner tweeted within minutes of this decision that this is all the more reason why we have to fight for repeal of this entire law.
I think my party has got to do a better job than it's been doing of helping people to understand why this bill is so important. To repeat, the folks that do not have insurance in this country are overwhelmingly working people and their families. They're not folks on welfare. They get Medicaid. They're not those of us who are 65 and older. We get Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
They're not veterans. They're fortunate. They've got the VA. These are working people under the age of 65 and their families. And I think my party has done a lousy job of helping people to understand that. So what I want to see now is the Democrats saying, okay, this is about working folks and their families. Are working people in the United States and their families going to have decent, affordable health care? And when a guy like Boehner does what he does today, first question that ought to be asked them is, well, don't you believe that working people and their families ought to have decent, affordable health care? If you take a poll in the United States and ask that question of Americans, 93% say yes. Hmm. And we've just not done an effective job, in my opinion, of helping people understand that.
A lot of people say yes to that question, but again and again we've seen polls, and maybe it's because they don't understand the intricacies of this law, but most Americans seem to have problems with the Affordable Care Act. So, you know, does this galvanize their opponents? I mean, the opponents of the Affordable Care Act.
Look, it may galvanize them, although I don't know that they're going to be any more angry than some of these people already are.
Sure.
What I want to see is those of us who are strongly for making good and affordable health care available to working people and their families out there saying this. We haven't done that. You know, this is not about pre-existing conditions. It's not just about putting your kids on the policy until they're 26. That's mm-hmm. fine. 3 million young Americans still have insurance thanks to that. It's about the fundamental issue of whether or not working people and their families are going to have decent, affordable health care in this country. And we better say that, and we haven't been doing a very good job of that.
Okay, Michael Dukakis, former governor of Massachusetts, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we're talking, of course, about how today's ruling on the Affordable Care Act is going to affect politics nationally and in Massachusetts, among other issues. Let's take a call. Kathy is calling from Wellesley. You're from Wellesley, but you're calling from Phoenix, Arizona. Do I have that right, Kathy?
No, I grew up in Wellesley, but I live now in Phoenix. I'm in Wellesley right now.
Okay, you're in Wellesley.
Anyway, I'm just elated at this bill. I think it's wonderful. First, three things, briefly. One, it's right and just that everyone should have access to affordable health care. We're the only first world country in the world that does not have that. Secondly, it will make health care more affordable for everyone if everyone, even the healthy, have to be insured. Because not only just the sick will be buying insurance and can charge them a whole lot. And thirdly, I think it's very capitalistic because what is the most advertised service or commodity on TV? It's auto insurance. Why is that? Because everybody has to have it. And that apparently is constitutional. You have to have auto insurance. You have to pay into Medicare. You have to pay into Social Security. But it's unconstitutional to have to pay into your health care.
Well, that's a settled question now. After
they got it right.
Got it, Kathy. Thank you so much for the call. And my next guest might have a slightly different point of view than you, Kathy, but let's introduce him. Republican Richard Tesei. He's a former state senator now running for Congress. He's challenging Democrat John Tierney in Massachusetts' 6th District in the northeast corner of the state. And Richard Tesei, welcome back to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Great to be here again.
So let me start this way. Obviously, a big win for President Obama. You're running in a state in which universal health care is viewed pretty favorably. What's your reaction to this decision by the court?
Well, I probably have a more different opinion of this than some of the national Republicans, because I voted for the health care law that we have here in Massachusetts, and I think I have a different perspective on things. We did put it, you know, we did have a situation here in Massachusetts where we had 92% of the people who had insurance here. And the whole idea behind the bill that passed in Massachusetts was getting from 92 to 99.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did here in Massachusetts is still a work in progress. There were two parts of the bill. First, to get people insured, and I think everybody wants to see every American have access to affordable health insurance. But the other part was cost containment and to try to keep costs down so small businesses could continue to hire people and the economy could function and be robust. We haven't done any of that. And the legislature, 6 years later, this week, is still negotiating a bill to deal with the cost containment part. So I'm happy I voted for the bill here in Massachusetts, but I certainly don't want to impose what we did here in Massachusetts on other states because it's still a work in progress here.
So let me ask you about that, though. Let's say you beat John Tierney, you're reelected, you join the Republican caucus down there in Washington. Within minutes, as we've said a couple of times on the show already, after the Supreme Court released its decision, John Boehner, the House Speaker, tweeted that this is why it's more important than ever to repeal the law.
Would you
favor that?
I would favor repealing the law. And if you can't repeal the law, I would look at the parts of the law that I think need to be changed.
But wait a minute. Let me just push you just a little bit on that, because as you know, Mitt Romney, the Republican nominee for president, I mean, has gotten into all kinds of trouble in the navigating this difficult conversation about I favored it in Massachusetts, but I would vote for repeal nationally.
Well, what Mitt Romney has said, and I think is true, is that every state is different. Mm-hmm. And to impose what we did here in Massachusetts on other states around the country isn't going to work. Again, we started off with 92% of the people in Massachusetts who were insured. The state of Texas has, I think, 25 or 30%. It's a bigger number. And obviously, the solution that they need to get more insurance available to people in other states is going to be different than in Massachusetts. So the Governor Romney has come out and said, you know, why don't we incentivize every state in the country to figure out how to get this, you know, how to reduce the number of uninsured, and then use the best practices in each state. You know, let each state be innovative and put in a program. What we did here in Massachusetts might work in our state, maybe a couple others, but...
You think today's decision weakens the case for repeal or strengthens it?
I think that today's decision pretty much says that this isn't going to be decided by the courts. It's going to be decided by the legislature and the Congress. And I think that there are a number of parts of the bill that even here in Massachusetts, Democrats have come out and said, not a good idea. The medical device tax, 2.3% excise tax on medical device makers.
So that's something you'd like to see changed.
That's something Elizabeth Warren has come out and said needed to be changed because it's going to stifle innovation. You already have medical device companies saying that they're going to implement hiring freezes and lay off employees. That has been the only cluster, really, that's produced jobs over the last few years, $60,000 to $80,000 on average. Those are good middle-class jobs. So you don't want to hurt that sector of the industry. Barney Frank has come out and said this independent medical payment board is, and it wasn't just Barney Frank, it was every major medical association in Massachusetts. This is the Independent Payment Advisory Board, and that board is going to have the power to decide what is reimbursable and what isn't under Medicare. And basically, it's the government is going to be taking a position between a doctor and the patient, rather than a doctor and a patient making a decision as to what type of care they need. You're going to have this unelected, unaccountable board pretty much, you know, deciding in certain cases across the board, sort of like actuaries, what is reimbursable and what isn't. Barney Frank has come out and Representative Capuano and said, you know what, that should be repealed because it's dangerous. It's a huge overstep of the government's power into people's life. So there are problems with the bill, and I guess the way I would look at it is that if you can't repeal the bill, you should go through some of these different sections and provisions and see if you can make them more palatable.
And if you were to repeal the bill, if you were to repeal the bill, you support things like tort reform, health savings accounts, allowing people to buy health insurance across state lines, in short, market-based solutions. And I guess I want to ask you, hasn't the market failed in making sure that all Americans have adequate health insurance to this point in time?
Well, I think the problem is that there isn't enough affordable insurance, and there are too many people who are uninsured around the country, and that's why here in Massachusetts we put this bill up. I want to say that there are a lot of provisions in the federal bill that mirror the provisions that are in Massachusetts. I think everybody agrees that pre-existing conditions should be covered. I think everybody agrees that, you know, you should be able to keep your kids on your health care plan a little longer than what we had before the law. Those provisions I don't think are controversial.
So you would keep those, but obviously those would go away if you're going to favor repeal.
No, absolutely not, because in Massachusetts, those protections are built into the law that we have here in Massachusetts.
Right.
We were able to pass a law in Massachusetts without increasing 18 taxes.
No, I understand. Of course, they would say in Massachusetts, but in all the other states that doesn't have Massachusetts law, they would go away.
They would.
With repeal.
Right, but I think the role of the federal government should be to encourage states to put together plans that are innovative and that tailor-made for those individual states. And you can incentivize other states by, you know, the fact that granting waivers like the federal government did here in Massachusetts to allow more people to go on Medicaid. I mean, there's more than one way to do this, and I think that the way that the bill ended up traveling through the legislature created a very divisive situation in this country, and it would be good after the election to have people sit down at a table and, you know, put the partisanship aside and say, what can we do to move forward in the area of health care?
Well, Richard Tesei, many thanks for coming in. We appreciate it. That's Richard Tesei. He's a Republican running for Congress in Massachusetts' 6th District. We had asked the incumbent Democrat John Turney to join us, but his schedule in Washington didn't allow for that today.
We are talking about the Supreme Court's 5-4 ruling on the Affordable Care Act today. The High Court held up the landmark health care reform passed by the Congress and President Obama in 2010. What's your reaction to today's decision? Was it the right thing? Was it the wrong thing? Do you think this means Massachusetts' landmark health care reform really is the blueprint for healthcare reform across the country? And if that's the case, what should come next? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We've got a lot of callers who have something to say about this, so let's go to Westboro, where John is calling. You're on the air, John.
Hi, glad to be on the air. I have a couple points I want to make. First of all, Michael Dukakis said that this is about universal coverage. You know, Obamacare is not about that. It's going to leave at least 35 million people without coverage. And as in Massachusetts, many will be undercovered. Secondly, like Massachusetts, it will be a cost control nightmare. It doesn't work. We have bankruptcies that are skyrocketing still under Romney Care. Third, this is presented as a right-left thing. The right is against the decision. The left is in favor. But that's not true. I'm a physician. Myself and 50 other physicians, members of Physicians for National Health Program and Single Payer Action, filed an amicus brief with the Supreme Court. We're against this. We do think it's unconstitutional. And we know that we can provide health care for all in a way that contains costs, is cheaper, and that's called Medicare for All.
In that case, John, would you like to see, come November, a Congress put into place that would, as they've some people on the Republican Party have been calling for, to repeal and replace this law?
Absolutely. It's a roadblock to Medicare for All. And basically, what it is, it's a bribe, because it says to us that the only way you can get to health care for all is something that appears to be that anyway, is by paying off the insurance companies. You can't do it through Medicare. And I frankly think that's why Roberts voted the way he did. As usual, finance capital and the insurers rule. That's what Obamacare is. That's what Romney Care is. And there's only shadow boxing between them. They're all run by the insurance companies.
John, thank you so much for your call. We've got to take a quick break, but I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
There's more ahead. Stay with us. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll be right back.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about the Supreme Court's major decision today, upholding the Affordable Care Act. It was a 5-4 decision. The swing vote, to many people's surprise, came from Chief Justice John Roberts, who, when writing in the majority opinion, called the individual mandate a tax, and by just that one small phrase basically saved the Affordable Care Act. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let us know what you think about what happened at the High Court today and what you think should come next for health care. There's been reaction coming from all over the state of Massachusetts today regarding what the court decided. We have a statement here from Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Tribe, who's argued many times in front of the Supreme Court. And he says, although it's surprising how few people seem to have noticed, Chief Justice Roberts signaled on the very first day of oral argument this March that he saw this mandate as merely a tax. And then Professor Tribe goes on to say, it's enormously gratifying that the Chief Justice, whose views count, while of course mine don't, that's Professor Tribe saying, that Chief Justice Roberts saved the day and perhaps the court. Well, on that note, a lot of people are wondering exactly what impact the decision will have on the court's legacy. And while the nation is trying to sort through the ripple effects of the court's decision, Lyle Denniston was right at the epicenter this morning in Washington. Denniston is WBUR's accredited reporter for the Supreme Court of the United States. He's also a reporter for the SCOTUS blog, possibly the most watched blog in the entire country this morning, as Lyle Denniston broke the news on each one of the rulings. So we spoke with him about what it was like this morning at the Supreme Court. Well, Lyle, I have to ask you, you've been covering the Supreme Court of the United States for more than 50 years. What was today's decision like for you when it came down? How big is this in the history of your coverage of the court?
Well, the only comparable decision that I can think of in my career was probably Bush versus Gore in 2000, because the anticipation of that opinion in Bush versus Gore was great. It wasn't anywhere near as great as the anticipation for this decision, because we now have the push from social networking and the whole internet enterprise, and so I guess I, like everybody else, was really really very excited about it, very eager to see it.
Well, Lyle, let me ask you. I mean, you mentioned that it was kind of a crazy scene at the court today. It's calmed down a little bit, but what was it like this morning in the halls of the highest court of the land?
Well, when a big case like this comes along, particularly one where you know the day on which it's going to come down, and we knew this on Monday because the chief said this would be the last day, you get a lot of extra reporters who don't normally cover the court, and you get a huge crowd outside, and you get people pursuing various causes outside the court. So the noise level ramps up, the crowd level ramps up, and everybody's juices are flowing very hot. And so inside the court building, there are reporters pushing and shouting. I think I got a good elbow in the stomach when I was leaving the press room with my copy of the opinion.
Who would have ever thought that in the usual decorum of the Supreme Court that covering the justices would be a contact sport? But, Lyle, let me ask you, you mentioned the internet and the SCOTUS blog where you were reporting the decisions today was on every single computer screen in our newsroom and probably every single computer screen in newsrooms across the country. It turned out to be one of the single most important sources of information for what was happening at the court today. I think maybe approximately a million users logged on to SCOTUS blog. And I'll tell you, in our newsroom at least, there was a collective gasp when you blogged that in this 5-4 decision, it was Chief Justice John Roberts who was that swing fifth vote. Now, did you see that coming at all in your experience covering the high court?
Well, we did, and for very discreet reasons. The Chief Justice, John Roberts, is a very conservative justice, and he's really true to his conservative views. But John is also very sensitive about the court as an institution and about its institutional reputation. And we have gotten the clear impression, those of us who hang around the court, that John is very sensitive to the fact that there's this perception out there that he and President Obama have an ongoing feud. And John really cares about the long-term stature of the Supreme Court. And there's an awful lot of public conversation now, particularly in the wake of the Citizens United decision 2 years ago, that this is a court that is driven by pure partisan politics. I think John made up his mind that if there were a way that he could avoid creating the further impression that, one, the court was driven by politics, and two, the court was an adversary of a Democratic president, he was going to do that.
Lyle Denniston has covered the United States Supreme Court for more than 50 years. He is the accredited reporter for the High Court for WBUR and also reports for the SCOTUS blog. Lyle, thank you so much for all your work today.
Well, I'm happy to do it, and it was a blast, I can tell you that.
We've got a couple comments or a lot of comments going on at WBUR's Facebook page. Colleen Lewis says, congratulations to the president and the American people. While Richard Pinillo says, I wonder what other goods and services I will now be required to buy. This is genius, really. Socialism masquerading as capitalism.
2 points of view there. Listeners, the conversation continues at RadioBoston.org. Let us know what you think about today's Supreme Court decision and what it means to you.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.